Chris Hamilton from the Australian Payments Clearing Association. I think we should thank Terrapin for putting together such a really good panel here, because you get the different viewpoints right across the spectrum, and that's a terrific place to start. I wanted to point out two relatively recent data points to the panel, and in fact maybe get everybody's point of view or anyone who wants to have a go at them, because they seem to me to be very significant evidentiary developments in this long-running regulatory debate. The first one is that large merchants are now paying lower interchange rates than the regulatory cap typically, and therefore that would suggest that a lot of the network externality theory of how the economics are going to work needs to be reassessed. That's a very significant development, it seems to me. The second one relates to some work that the Reserve Bank itself has done, which talks about the price and service sensitivity, if you like, of consumers in taking payment services and how they will change their behaviour if the price points for the payment service guide them to do so. And if you put that together with the latest data on the amount of direct charging that's going on, it starts to suggest that the consumer and the merchant are making now a joint decision about whether to buy a particular payment service rather than the consumer always deciding whether to buy the payment service. So there's, I realise that's quite a complicated question, but there's two data points there and plenty to pick out from. What I'm really suggesting is that our traditional model of how our payments network works needs to be reassessed in light of what's happening in evidentiary terms.
So who wants to have a shot at that one? Well, you thought I was confusing.
Can I just clarify, though, your second point, this evidence on the sensitivity of consumers to prices? To what are you referring?
There was some work by John Simon and a couple of his colleagues published recently.
No, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. The first point I'd make, and this is where I think it'll be interesting also to see what happens with the New Zealand versus the Australian experience, which you were talking about earlier. It's true that larger merchants have opportunities to pay interchange below the cap. Interestingly, though, what you observe is that the cap on average you're never below the cap on average. You are always, in fact, pushing up towards the cap. And although we don't publish any data on these, the evidence, in fact, is that you tend to be a little bit above the cap for a variety of reasons. So what that suggests to me is that, yes, large merchants, as in all things, can use their relative size to negotiate down their prices. They do it when they're negotiating with their smaller suppliers. They do it with their banks. They do it all round. Smaller merchants, though, no. So what tends to happen is that you end up with this evidence that somehow there's competition working on the large merchant side, but it's not actually working on the small merchant side. So I would question whether or not, I agree it's a good development, but I'm not sure it's widespread enough, really. It's not really much more widespread than a few large merchants. Secondly, the sensitivity of consumers to prices. I think that is a very interesting point, and I would highlight there a couple of things. The first is that surcharging is potentially quite important here, and we do know that consumers do tend to react to surcharging, although what they do tend to do is, from what we can tell, again, a little bit of this is anecdotal, is that they tend to move from one card payment to another card payment, from a higher surcharge to a lower surcharge, or perhaps, pardon me, or perhaps from a card that is being surcharged to a card that isn't being surcharged. So that's the first thing. But the second point is that if you look at the relative prices that consumers face, just very broadly, it is still a fact that for consumers that use credit cards and paid off by the due date, they are still facing negative prices. That has not changed. They still face a negative price. So they've got one card they can use where they face a zero or a positive price, and they've got another one where they face a negative price. There is some evidence that if you move that, those relative prices, consumers will move, but the fact is that you still have a very big difference in relative price. So I guess all I'm saying is I'm not sure that the evidence suggests we can necessarily rewrite the economic model just yet, but I think there is a space to watch.
Anybody else want to comment? Thanks, Scott.
I'll go ahead and make a few comments. Well, I tend to, in terms of the large merchants, I think most of Michelle's comments are spot on. The reality is the benefits of scale always exist in every industry. So in terms of volumes, arguably the actual cost of establishing and subsequently processing, while many of those costs are fixed, it's certainly logical. I think it bears out that you will see, in many cases, larger players negotiating better outcomes. And I think that's kind of forever the way it's been and will continue to be so. So I don't know that that's an update or a change in any of the activity that's actually going on. To me, it's a continuation of what's been going on for quite some time. I suppose on the consumer side, I do think the first point is I believe there's a point of elasticity. Whether you're at a petrol station, when you walk inside and you realize actually there's a surcharge here, if you've already pumped the petrol, you're unlikely to move on. The reality is that that surcharging is becoming more and more common, and in many cases, the surcharging actually does exceed the actual merchant service costs in those cases as well. Now, those are competitive decisions each of those merchants actually make, and they're entitled to do so. But I think up to those points of elasticity, this happens. And then Michelle's point on card switching is absolutely true. And I think this is where the importance of multiple domestic schemes also comes into play as well. It does offer consumers choices on how different things work. So that, I think that's actually functioning and functioning well in some senses. So I guess that would be my two cents, so to speak.
Thanks, Scott. Okay, another question. Down the front. The very front row, thanks.
Thank you. My name's Peter Mayer. I am a writer on regulation for CFO magazine. I just want to make a couple of comments. Earlier today, we heard that the Reserve Bank was a reluctant regulator in the payments area. While I'm sure the financial institutions appreciate that, I'm not sure that the wider community wouldn't be more pleased if the Reserve Bank was a bit more active. Stuart emerged from the Greek sojourn with a plea for institutions to be allowed to be self-reliant in the way they regulate themselves. I found that a bit amusing given the release, the report on Lehman Brothers, which is in the paper this morning, and more generally, the way in which the world economy is suffering, the consequences of allowing financial institutions to rely on their own good graces. Michelle talked about the importance of cooperation, which is always true, but the experience in the payments area is that it's a very short step from cooperation to collusion. And finally, I think it was Scott was talking about the importance of self-regulation, and I guess this brings me to the point that I'd like the panel to comment on. From the consumer point of view, the self-regulation we would like to see is that merchant interchange fees are set to zero, and we'd like all the card payment participants to agree on that self-regulation. Thank you.
So this is a time it's really good to be the moderator, so I'll just pass across to you. So we've got a large bank, we've got a retailer, and we've got a large regional bank.
Well,
and Michelle, I won't ask you to comment.
I guess I really don't need to say anything more than I agree.
So Scott or Greg, I'm sure you've got a view. Either or both of you?
Sure. That's a very practical suggestion. I think we can all go there. Withdraw our services in the cards area altogether. I don't know, Peter. We've been before the what's that commission? The trial. Yeah, Keith, where were you? Where was that? When we tried to set it to zero before. I don't think that's the problem. I think it being transparently said and being something that's governed and has proper, you know, structure around it, that's really the issue. The interchange fee is nothing other than a balancing fee in the network. If you take that away, then you'll go to other commercial models that try to achieve the same thing. So I don't think it's the villain.
Yeah, I guess I'll add a couple of cents to that. I think Greg's points are largely right. It will emerge in one place or another. It's got to be a commercial outcome for those who are actually managing the infrastructure and actually accumulating the costs. But I think one of the key opportunities, though, is and everybody's focused very heavily on the existing kind of interchange around global schemes, is the emergence of a lot of the other payment mechanisms. Wherever there's money being made, there will always be opportunity for essentially new entrants to come into play. And I think, you know, this is where we see the likes of PayPal and others actually coming in and actually driving commercial outcomes. And I think, you know, the level of adoption that we've actually seen is quite significant as well. So I guess there's always going to be market forces that open up other avenues. And I think Greg's point is correct, that if you were to necessarily eliminate interchange in this regard, would it show up in another guise? At a commercial level, would have to in some sense.
Thanks, Scott. So just behind Peter, Keith Wilson, the second row.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. We've heard a lot about competition, big versus small, certainly in the merchant space, and the benefits that the big merchants have got and perhaps not the small merchants. I was interested to see whether the from the smaller players in the market, whether the competitive landscape has changed as a result of regulation, both in the issuing and the acquiring side, and perhaps our small bank up there, Greg Devlin, might be able to address that.
Yeah, thanks, Keith. I think there has been some change. There's no question the Australian market had some structural issues and still does, predominantly around its bilateral network infrastructure, and that's gradually changing. If you ask a smaller player, not at a quick enough pace, a bit frustrating. But I think once that direction we seem to be going on now gets set, then I think that's going to improve a lot. We are keen to see other players into the market, so, you know, we're encouraged by some of the smaller entrants that are having a go now. They do a real good in the sense that they stimulate and innovate, and they get us off our seats and get going. So I think it is improving, but, obviously the GFC's had a big impact on that. There's a large imbalance in this market. The four majors, depending on which measure you're looking at, carry just about all of it, and therefore also most of the cost as well. But the other players are trying to, you know, put a decent footprint out there and provide alternatives. So I think it has helped in that sense. I still worry about the rate of change and pace, and hopefully the current agendas underway will just sort of accelerate that a bit.
Okay, and again, down in the second row, who's got the microphone?
Hi, I'm Karis Palmer from Banking Review Media. Just wanted to talk a little bit more about innovation and wondering if the panel could comment on Project Mambo, whether it's satisfied with the progress of that project, which I would argue is probably the only chance of systematic or system innovation that we've seen in recent years.
Oh,
Michelle's smiling.
Well, having nothing to do with it.
I think it's a good question. What is happening, guys?
I do think it is a good question. I will say I'm probably not directly involved with it at a Westpac level. I think it's an interesting question because I think Mambo obviously holds both opportunity for the market, but as well as, if, you know, there are undoubtedly challenges in execution along this path. But I think the interesting thing for all of us is that it's back on the agenda for, I think, you know, evaluation consideration. At one point, it seemed that it was not moving anywhere. But I think it's certainly back on the agenda. Do I think it's the only opportunity for innovation? I don't think so. I always think any time that by necessity you're forced to regulate innovation, it often leads to driving people to the table with a bit of a reluctance. Market forces actually generally, where the opportunity exists, create a faster outcome and a more competitive one, in the sense that I think for all the participants who look at it, you know, you know, we do, I think Michelle made this point earlier, in saying we evaluate, you know, how we actually invest capital and what return we're actually going to get from it. So collaborative attempts are absolutely required, but they also might move with less speed than you might see on, you know, market-led innovation. So, look, I think it absolutely still provides an opportunity, and I think it's something that's exciting for Australia, but I do think that it won't be the only innovation that we actually see. You know, to Greg's point, I think the next 10 years is actually going to be quite full of innovation, aside from Mambo itself.
Yeah, I think the industry is at one of those step-up points. You know, innovation comes along and steps occasionally, and some of the work that's going on around networking solutions in the market, there's a project called Coin going on at the moment. Yeah. It's about getting this bilateral mess into a virtual cloud kind of structure. You get some standardization going across that, the ability for people to come in and compete and do things in that space. So the railroads are difficult to run on, and you know, innovation is difficult to get to, and you know, Mambo is trying to address some of that, but I think you're going to see other innovations going on around that. It's not the only solution out there at the moment. The FBOS sleeping giant is going to get rabbed up again, so you know, I think you'll see some things going on in the market the next few years.
My understanding is that the New Zealand Bankers Association has picked up that portability of automatic payments and direct entry, and are having a look at that in our own market as well.
Any more questions? Is there a question for our New Zealand colleague down the end, who sort of been sitting there very quietly?
Look, can I come back to that question about zero interchange fees? I think card issuers absolutely provide value back to merchants, and you can test that idea if you had an authorisation message that came back to the merchant that said approved at the merchant's discretion, and you gave them no certainty as to whether they would get their funds, and you held onto the funds until such time as you'd received value back from the cardholder, would you have a proposition that they would sign up for? I think we used to call it checks. And, you know, would you go back there? So this idea that issuers don't warrant value when every other player down the value chain can get return from value, I think, is a poorly formed idea.
Final chance for questions. We're bang on time. No? Oh, down the very back. One last minute question. That's it.
Jane Sell from the Financial Review. Do you think that there are sufficient incentives for the cooperation needed for system innovation and for self-regulation?
Do
you think there are sufficient incentives in place for the cooperation needed for system innovation and for self-regulation?
Yeah, it's called the RBA threat.
I'll have a very quick crack at that. Look, I think things have changed dramatically in the last 12 years since the Payment System Board was formed in 1998. I think at that point in time, there was very much a sort of a view that industry regulator should be hands-off. It's nothing to do with the regulator at all. The payments industry can look after itself. So I think that it became quite clear early on that the Payment System Board and the Reserve Bank, in fact, meant business. And the result of that then has been, I think, now that the industry has decided whether or not they agree that they do have to do something. And so my view would be, and as I said earlier, I think there are some examples where the industry is, in fact, getting together on systemic innovation. So you've got the Coin project currently going on. You've got some of this business going on with Mambo. I think you've got this whole issue of fraud and security, which I think the industry is making a genuine attempt to grapple with. You know, it's broader than just one scheme or one institution. Fraud has to be tackled cooperatively. So I think there are signs that there is enough incentive now for the industry to do it. Would we have got there without perhaps that initial argy-bargy back in the late 1980s, early 2000s? Maybe not. But I think at the moment the direction to me, I think, is encouraging.
And I think that's a really good note upon which to wrap up this morning's session. Please join me in thanking the panel, Michelle, Scott, Douglas, Greg and Russell. Thank you for your time.